starting up the car and heading to lunch. I know that when I wear this coat, the microphone is ill-placed on my iPhone earbuds. And so I sort of get this almost like crunching sound. I apologize for that if that happens. But it is the coat. It's my sort of stiff-necked jacket. I've had a lot of conversations lately about why I'm a technology nerd, and people that have seemed to almost demand an explanation on why I geek out. And I mean, well, that sort of trivializes what they mean, I think. Why am I so obsessed, I've been asked, with technologies? You know, why do I talk about things like Second Life? Why do I talk about things like Twitter? Why is it important? And it's almost always done in this very dismissive, well, I can't possibly understand how, you know, how this is a real way to spend any kind of time. And there are certainly downsides, obviously, to being very informationally aware when it comes to technology. Having, you know, something like a smartphone, an iPhone, or whatever, where you're always updating, you're staying updated with not typical news. That's the way I believe a lot of people perceive it, is they think, well, you know, you either spend all your time listening to a particular brand of news, much like people, you know, sitting on a couch and watching Fox News or CNN or something for hours. They feel that maybe it's sort of like that, only it's sort of specialized, sort of geek news. Maybe that's not entirely an unfair way of thinking about it. But it's more complicated than that, obviously. What it really is there's a tongue-in-cheek dismissal of people who sort of see someone like myself, who's very internet-oriented, very technology-oriented, as being unnatural. It's just not a natural thing to do. Certainly, it's not particularly physically healthy. I mean, I definitely need to punch up the time on the treadmill, and it's hard to stay connected when you're attached to if you're attached to it like a desktop computer. Of course, that's a little easier now with mobile phones and all that. But the argument that I've made is that there is nothing unnatural about technology. There is nothing unnatural about technology. I want to repeat that sort of to really hammer home the point. Technology is an extension of the imagination. The imagination, we give lip service today for the benefit of kids, not making their lives as miserable as the average adult life. We give lip service to the great benefits of imagination, that you have to, oh, you know, be imaginative, you know, watch Reading Rainbow, read a book and be imaginative. But we say it very half-hearted. We don't really mean it. We don't actually want people to be... There's a group of kids heading toward me here. Sort of strange. Looks like they are on a school trip of some kind. We don't really mean for them to use their imaginations in the way that they should be, in the way I do, in the way many people do, but you're sort of looked at sideways for it, like you've got bugs in your, you know, on your face or something. What we tell kids about using the imagination is we give children the impression from a very early age that your imagination is a great and wonderful thing for diversion, and it makes life sort of interesting, and it gives you a little bit of flavor to your playtime, etc. And some of the smarter people, you know, teachers will say, oh, well, actually, the imagination's what sort of gives you a future, because it makes you understand, you know, that there's things like space, you know, that you can go and fly in a rocket ship. And but essentially, everything in our society does come back down to physics or some other brand of analytical thinking, which has physics envy, which is envious of the easily quantifiable, easily measurable, as physics is. It's physics envy. So the imagination is far, far more important than the analytical side of the human mind. This, everything about our society seems to say the opposite, and this sounds like someone who is just upset that no one understands my art or something. But no, let me bring this down to a level of physics and sort of quantify it. The imagination, what it represents is the human brain's ability to cognate in time and space. Imagination is the starting point of all perception, or certainly all human perception. Without an imagination, one cannot be aware of here versus there, now versus then, versus soon to be. These things exist. They operate in a matrix that we call imagination. We are envisioning the future. We are envisioning someplace else. We are envisioning what has happened to us. The imagination in this way is it and not physics, is the arbiter of our perception of reality. Technology is not unnatural because technology is like a concrescence. It's a congealing of the imagination into the physical world. And when you begin to realize this, you begin to realize that what we are looking for, what technology really represents, is our search for the Philosopher's Stone. It's the Philosopher's Stone, of course, in alchemy, it was the magic stone that would give you immortality and power, and it was technology. It was the Promethean flame, something that we're seeking to do still. It never went away. We are still seeking the Philosopher's Stone. We are still seeking a way to give us that kind of encompassing, sort of godlike power. And what I submit to you is the nature of imagination tells us that this is a perfectly, perfectly natural thing. This is a stage in our evolution, a stage in our being. It's our quest to undo what we are as a species terrified can't be undone. And let me see. Sorry, I'm actually going through a drive-thru once again. Shouldn't be, but I am. It's driving us toward the point where we're going to have to answer the question, what do you do when you can do anything? The real question that I know I've been asked is what does this have to do with anything? What does this have to do with me getting my kids to soccer practice or making sure they brush their teeth or making sure that I have money for college or securing a future? And the truth is it doesn't have anything to do with any of these. That is the problem. Well, I actually had to pause, and I can't exactly remember where I was. But anyway, the thing is I know one of the other things is, and this will be the final little tirade. Was someone couldn't understand why I felt that. Yeah, a kid's interest in science fiction is far more important than having an interest in watching cop dramas in other words, like what's so special about science fiction was what the message was. That in this sort of ecumenical view of all things being equal in society when it comes to preferences and taste, that there's nothing, you know, hey, if sports is your thing, then that's great, go at it. There's so many great things to get from sports, and that is true. You know, I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, I played plenty of sports myself. That's fun, but what you have to understand is it is not ecumenical. Science fiction is important. It is very important. It seems like fantasy. It is not. And the reason is because it's the nature of what science fiction is. I remember Arthur C. Clarke was famous for saying, you know, politicians should read science fiction. If they want to understand their world, they need to read science fiction. And the reason is because we don't create technology as a civilization, as a species, because we're inspired by science fiction. This is a problem of category. We don't make technology because we're inspired by science fiction. We write science fiction because we are dreaming of technology. We are dreaming the world into being. Science fiction is a window. It's an oracle for the future as it's emerging from our imaginations into our technology, into our own little philosopher's stone.